You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore. This week's sponsor is the Dancing Dwarf, Seacomber's premier political zine. Tired of the mainstream media always talking about the wonderful feats of the nobles, leaders, and guildmasters of Waterdeep? Try the Dancing Dwarf, a zine by the people, for the people. You can find it where you find it, but try the Dockyards first.
I thought we agreed we weren't taking political sponsorships because we wanted to remain neutral.
Josh, we don't have any sponsors. We need so much money. Podcast is expensive.
It's certainly more expensive than I thought it would be. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm definitely making it more expensive than it needs to be.
Well, that's the quality that we want. We can't put our names to something that's not, you know, I would listen to my podcast if I wasn't on it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would only listen to the podcast if I wasn't editing it. There was a thread on Threads. Is that what they call those? Is it a thread on Threads? Because that's fucking stupid.
I think that's why they called it that, but that doesn't make it better.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a thing on Threads where people were asking, like, do you listen to your own podcast? And I was like, yes, I listen to my own podcast several times as I am editing it.
Right.
it is a lot. There is only so much.
Yeah, I go back and I listen every week just to course correct. Obviously, I have the normal amount of imposter syndrome and self-loathing. So I definitely hear my own verbal tics and then I'm disgusted by them. And then God, don't so change them.
I don't hear mine.
Right? You don't hear yours when you're listening to the show?
No, I can't hear mine as I'm speaking, right? So trying to correct them, I don't know when they happen.
You can't get out ahead of it. It's
Yeah, there's this like weird noise that I make when I'm correcting a word mid-word.
Mm.
And I hate it.
Yeah.
And now I'm bringing it to everybody's attention, so you're going to be listening for it. But like, if I have to correct in the middle of a word, there's this like weird eh sound that I make in the middle of that word. And
oh, I've heard that noise.
Fucking batty. I hate it.
I'm sure you would, but it's also endearing, but yes,
it will. There was a project that I had to do in school.
Okay.
And I'm just opening up a can of trauma right here on the pod.
That's why we do this podcast. It's partial therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just letting everybody listen to our therapy sessions. So the project was, we had to write a narrative story about a bean going through the digestive system.
Oh no.
And so I did, and I tried to make it funny, and I don't know if anybody listening to our podcast has noticed, but I am not the funny one. So we made it as flippant and sarcastic as we could as we were doing it, and I was elected to be the person who was going to read this out in front of the class. And as I was reading it, we started getting laughs. I was like, fuck yeah, we're killing. We're killing up here. And then people started echoing that noise back to me.
Oh, no.
I was like, I don't actually know what it is that they're doing. But, like, I guess that's a noise a bean could make in a digestive system. So I kept going. And I guess through reading this thing, I hit that tick a whole bunch of times in short succession. They were definitely not laughing at my jokes. They were laughing at me making this stupid fucking noise.
Oh, Christopher.
Yeah. Yeah. It hurts my soul still, like 73 years later.
Yeah.
High school.
Dear reader, it has not been 73 years. We are just old, so.
What year was I in high school? That would have been like 1998. The fact that I had to start with a 19 should be evidence enough that I am very old.
Yeah, at least my high school years start with a 2000.
My son recently asked me about something from the 20th century. Hey, Dad, you remember the 20th century? I was like, yes.
Yeah, shut up.
Roughly 18 years of it, yes.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like back in the 1900s.
Yeah. Let's, don't phrase it like that. Ugh. Ugh. How did you do that?
Just, I needed it to dig into your soul as bad as it does mine.
Yeah, I only spent a couple less years in the 1900s, which is an awful phrase to say out loud. Why do you do this to us?
I had a lot of trouble coming up with a thing to say today, so I'm just kind of fucking riffing.
Yeah, that's fair. Today is a lot of trauma bonding and improv.
No, we wanted to talk about the rise of games as a service.
Yeah.
It's I a little bit coined the term. I don't know if anybody else is using that term, but it's like the software as a service model applied to tabletop games.
Yeah, so games as a service has been floating around the digital gaming space for a little while now. And unfortunately, Hasbro, in their infinite wisdom, has decided to spread that to tabletop. Obviously, we've got...
I don't know if they're the first ones, though.
What's that?
I don't know if they're the first ones, though.
They might not be the first, but they're definitely the worst offenders so far.
Like, I would be willing to say, and like this is going to be my hot take of the session.
Okay,
I would be willing to say that Magic the Gathering did it first.
You think so?
I do.
For what?
Through retroactive card changes that fundamentally change the ways that your card works in organized play. Through a model, like a sales model that requires you to continually purchase new packs in order to be able to stay relevant with the formats that are currently being used. I think it was just an early form of game as a service.
Okay. Interesting take. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Sorry to just like drop that one on you. You okay, bud?
No, I'm processing it. 'Cause like, to me, games as a service is very specifically aimed at like, we want that recurring subscription model, which when you rephrase a pack as a subscription to Magic the Gathering, it kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Especially if
you're it's just weird standard. Because you, what's that?
Especially if you're playing standard.
Well, nobody does anymore. So that's nice.
No, that's true. That was 10 years ago that everybody actually cared about standard.
Yeah. People haven't cared about standard in a hot minute. But I guess where it kind of gets wonky for me is that like you have to buy lots of packs or no packs. Like that, if you want to play Magic the Gathering, you don't actually have to participate in purchasing products from Wizards of the Coast because of the secondary market.
Which they famously love.
Right. Everyone loves it when they don't make money off of the thing that they own. And that's and that specific idea is, I think, what like the current expression of games as a service is directly trying to combat, is that you have to continue purchasing your service from them to participate in the thing, right? Like whether it's your monthly subscription or I don't know, expansions and stuff like that like lock things out. There's a bunch of different models out there, but their idea was like, let's eliminate secondary markets and force I guess ideally like an infinite transaction with your players. So like what am I trying to think? Like, so obviously with what Wizards is doing with D&D Beyond and stuff, it's just like drip feeding you new content constantly that you're paying for.
But there's other
companies that don't really do the subscription model. It's more like you have to buy some $20 item like two or three times a year, as opposed to like, hey, $80, you have the game forever.
I think the big distinction that I want to make with Wizards of the Coast in this particular instance, because I know that that's the model that Wizards wants to move towards. Like, they want everyone to be subscribed to D&D Beyond forever.
Yeah.
D&D Beyond is optional content.
Right.
Like, you don't need it to play the game.
No.
I think that Wizards of the Coast wants you to need it to play the game.
Yes.
I think that there has been a number of small pushes to delegitimize content that is not on D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
And that the change that is happening, like, to be specific, D&D Beyond has indicated that they are not going to be using all of the spells from 5th edition going forward after 5.5 is published.
It's not even going forward. They've already started removing the 2014 versions of spells and replacing them with 2024 versions.
Oh shit, speaking of, editor Christopher, here I am to tell you that as soon as we finish recording this episode, Wizards of the Coast retracted this statement. Do with that information what you will. Great.
Which you and I both know, like, it'd be very easy for them to have both. Like, that's not an actual issue.
Well, like, you and I work in software as a service.
Yes.
And the amount of technical ability that would be required to keep both of those things, like, it's to create a separate table for your 5th edition spells and your 5.5 spells. It's not that hard. It's not going to create a huge amount of bandwidth for your 5th edition stuff. It's not that difficult. It's just an on-off switch. It's a fucking Boolean. You do a Boolean for which table you're referencing.
And the other thing that it is that it is actually like a legitimate value add to your customers to be able to have both options. For people who existed in the first version and want to stay there, for those who are new to the game and are interested in like alternate versions of things, because everyone just likes more choice, right? Like, no one's like, oh man, there's just too many options in this game. I don't want to try it. Like,
well, and I think it's interesting that you phrase it like that, because I feel like this move suggests a mindset. And like, I can't speak for the folks at Wizards of the Coast. I don't know exactly what's going through their heads, but like, it feels like
March.
People.
Is it the Imperial March?
But it feels like the viewpoint of Wizards of the Coast is that if you are still playing D&D 2014, you are not actually a customer anymore.
Right. Yes.
You were a customer once.
Yeah.
Now you are not. We are servicing our customers. Our customers are the people who are buying 2024.
I'll tell you right now, I am 90% sure that is expressly their opinion. Like, if you haven't bought something from them in the last 5 years, you don't exist to them. You're not an actual customer. They need to convert you to a customer. You can't be, there's no such thing in their minds as like fans of Dungeons and Dragons or role-playing in general. There are customers and there are non-customers. And if you haven't spent money, you're a non-customer, and therefore they don't give a shit about you.
See, the frustrating thing for me is that I have spent money, right? Like,
in the past, that doesn't count now. That's old money.
No, I mean, like, I spent money this year.
Oh, okay.
Right, like, I owned the Player's Handbook and the Monster Manual for 5th edition at the beginning of this year.
Okay.
And I have since purchased several books, including like the DMG and the not very good nonsense, and like a couple of source books, the Eberron source book, right? Like, I picked up a bunch of 5th edition shit this year.
Yeah.
That.
But did you buy them on Beyond?
Well, no, because I don't have a Beyond subscription.
Yeah, then you're not a real person.
Working in software as a service has made me very leery of purchasing software as a service.
Correct. Because I know how dumb we are at this stuff, and we mean well.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even say that, because, like, going back to the podcast stuff, like, we have so many software as a service entities all up in mm-hmm. our podcast nonsense.
Yeah, of course.
Although there was one. Okay, so our theme music. Mm-hmm. Can you imitate our theme music for it?
No, I already did it once. Not getting me again.
Anyway, our theme music came originally from a software as a service called MusicBed.
Yeah.
And I have never had a harder time unsubscribing from a service.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're no longer with MusicBed, but like the license that I have is in perpetuity for this project.
Right, because weirdly enough, we purchased a thing that we needed, and yes. that was the end of the transaction.
Well, actually, I purchased a bunch. Like we actually have licenses for a few pieces of music. Like,
yeah.
I haven't had to use Editor Christopher in quite a while, but there's like a specific piece of music that goes in the background of Editor Christopher,
right?
That is also from MusicBed, and that just came from a subscription. But that subscription cost me like $30 a month. For a year, and you're only allowed to unsubscribe on a yearly basis.
So once, wait, so you had to give them
a year-long contract.
So it's $30 a month. You gave them that money, and they were yes. like, "Well, that's not good enough."
Yes, because
I hate that.
Yeah, like I try.
I feel like we got God. Like we. We did the thing yes. correctly, but I feel like they got one over on us.
It isn't just that. Like, I purchased my MusicBed, like my original MusicBed contract with uh-huh. them years ago, like at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
And
you just kept forgetting to cancel.
I had a couple of pieces for like a YouTube channel that went nowhere. Yeah. But the fact that it was like yearly, I kept forgetting.
Yeah, and then suddenly $400 would disappear out of your bank account, and you're like, what the fuck happened? And they're like, oh, right. And then you...
Well, no, like, it was being charged monthly, but, like, I would get to whatever my, like, re-up term for my contract was, and it would just automatically roll over to the next year, unless I stopped it. And I kept forgetting to stop it, so I would be locked in for the rest of the next year.
And there was no way to just, like... I guess at that point you have to like change all of your accounts and like whatever.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was brutal. And like that is like, I don't know if I ever want to work with, I know for a fact that I don't want to work with MusicBed again because of this shit. So I'm just going to say it.
Hey, fuck you guys.
The predatory kind of bullshit that this D&D Beyond move.
Yeah.
Is looking to emulate.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, like, they're like, we look at that and we see this is awful, and they're like, hey, that sounds profitable.
Yeah. Like, how do we make it so that you can't cancel your D&D Beyond subscription for a year?
Yeah.
Right? You're just locked in.
Yeah.
And they can. And that's the other scary thing, is that, like, software as a service and gaming as a service... The terms of that service are never up to you.
No, that's the best part. Like, the service does not exist to serve, you know?
Yeah. Like, there was that big to-do about the OGL
this year.
And the thing that caused them to change gears on that, like, one, I don't actually think they've changed gears on it.
No, here's what they did. They push the boundaries and we're like, oh, that's where the edge is right now. Okay, we'll back it up and we're gonna try again later. It's the boiling a frog method of fucking your customers.
Yeah. Yeah. So they threw the frog in boiling water just to see how hot it would get.
Yeah.
And then rolled it back and they're slowly turning up the temperature.
Yep.
Right. So like individual pieces of that same OGL are still being released. Individual 100%. Pieces of those changes are still going to be implemented. They're just going to do it slowly enough that people are going to be like, ah, this fucking sucks, but I guess I'm not going to keep paying for my D&D Beyond subscription anyway.
Yeah. If there's one thing I hope everyone takes away from this podcast, it's that you should cancel your D&D Beyond subscription now and forever.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a very good service.
No.
It's convenient, which is how they get you.
Sort of.
Sort of. If you
pay a bunch of money.
Yes. But, like, they're not doing anything that Roll20 isn't.
Nope.
And, like, the other thing is that Roll20 recently made an announcement that all of the 5th edition spells are going to be staying on their platform.
Of course. Because 5th edition didn't go away. We didn't get a new edition.
Mostly, I think it's just that Roll20 saw what happened to Wizards of the Coast and went, hey, we can make a buck off of this. True. There's going to be some people who are like abandoning ships, so we should maybe capitalize on that. Because all it needs is like one extra database table and a Boolean switch. Like,
yeah,
it's not that fucking hard.
Well, there's a service that my friend is using for her spell cards that I'm about to put all of my sorcerer stuff onto that. Yeah. They're also like, yeah, we're just going to keep both. Why wouldn't we? We're not making any money off this anyways. So.
Well, and that's the, okay. The, why wouldn't we is the interesting question there.
Okay.
Right. Like, when we see this kind of decision from Wizards of the Coast, the first thing that I always have to ask is, why did they choose to do it this way?
Right.
Right? Like, they are phasing out the 5th edition spells in D&D Beyond. What is in that for Wizards of the Coast?
That's, I don't know. Other than just, like, kind of invalidating the old stuff so that people are forced to buy the new stuff without actually saying we're invalidating the old stuff and getting all the negative press for it. That's my only thought.
Yeah. I think the thing that I am having some difficulty understanding, and like, maybe this is just because I'm not super invested in the D&D Beyond platform.
Right.
But like, D&D Beyond isn't a major part of my gaming experience.
No. No.
So, like, if they change how D&D Beyond works in a way that inconveniences me, I have no trouble just saying, fuck D&D Beyond. I don't need that.
Yes, exactly.
I'll just write out my character sheet by hand like I have for the last 30 years.
Right.
Like,
that, and that again, isn't going to... I think that is the only part of D&D Beyond that actually adds value.
The character creator?
Yeah. Genuinely. Yeah. Like... I don't know what other tabletop? What's that?
Do they have a virtual tabletop?
Not yet. They want to roll it out like this year or next year, but, and they have,
oh my God,
teased what's coming with it. Just so you like see, what's coming.
I don't know if you...
they're going to sell you. And this is like literally what they're doing. They're going to have a virtual tabletop where they can sell you cosmetics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you want to customize how your fireball looks? That'll be $2.
Okay, actually, roll back my a little bit.
Okay.
That is my favorite monetization method for any kind of video game.
If the rest of it was free.
When the rest of it is free.
Yeah, if they're like, hey, here's our cool new digital tabletop. It's completely free to use. Also, if you want to get funky with it, here's a way to do that. Like, they do that with, I play Path of Exile. Path of Exile, the whole thing is fucking free, and there's big, chunky new content every 2 months. And they're like, by the way, you could buy some wings if you want. And I'm like, I don't, but I appreciate that you could. And there are people who do, and that's how this game stays alive.
Back when I was struggling more with hating myself, I played League of Legends.
Speaking of... And,
and that was the first time that I saw that monetization method.
Yeah.
For a service game,
mm-hmm.
where like you're just doing, like, you can play the game for free.
Mm-hmm.
You have a couple of champions that they give you for free.
Yep.
You can pick up other champions with the in-game currency later.
Yep.
and cosmetics cost money.
The game is so free.
So free. How much money have you spent on League of Legends, Josh?
It's I haven't done the math. I'm afraid to do the math. I don't want to go find out. It's definitely in the hundreds of dollars for a game that would probably normally be, you know, $50 to $60. I used to go, and once a week when I filled up my gas tank at the 7-Eleven near my work, I would buy a League like $10 card and then go get a skin.
Every payday for years.
No, every week.
Okay, no, for me it was every payday for years.
I would okay, yeah, yeah,
like a $50
yeah.
League card,
yeah,
which would be enough for me to get like whatever their like the achievement pack thing
yeah.
is, and then like a skin or two maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have spent I think very close to $1,000 on that game.
Yeah.
Possibly just over $1,000 on that game.
Yeah, it's very I don't want to know how much I've spent on that game, but it's definitely in the hundreds.
It's and like, so free.
It's so free.
So free.
And all of that is because one, the game was free, and two, they gave me a free skin at PAX.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, so you got it's the like Jax Pat.
I have PAX Jax, and then I also got Arcade Hecarim for free.
Fantastic.
Right? So yeah, all they had to do was just like set the hook, and I was
yeah.
I'm on board.
Yeah, the first hit is free. And then after that you have to pay. Except that we keep giving you the drug for free. You just have to pay for like cooler pipes to smoke it.
I just have to, yeah, yeah, as we say, all the drugs are free. You just have to pay for the needles.
Yeah. What a terrible game. I do love their monetization method though. Like I don't feel bad about the money that I spent on that game.
No, neither do I. Like, and I'm a person who's used to being like nickel and dime to death. Like I have played World of Warcraft for 20 years. Like it's fine. Well,
speaking of games as a service.
Yeah, it's fine.
Is it?
No, it's not, but here I am.
And I think that like, especially in the video gaming sphere, I think World of Warcraft may have been one of the big innovators in games as a service.
100%. Yeah.
Like early
on. People actually ridiculed it for a while for charging a monthly fee.
I mean, I still ridicule it for charging a monthly fee.
I mean,
there's a free option.
I get it.
It's,
is there a free option?
I mean, it's not a very good free option.
What option are you thinking of?
There's like a version of World of Warcraft that you can play for free up to, I think, level 10 or some shit.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's just the, like, the demo. Like, no, yeah, nobody cares about the demo.
It's bad.
I would not consider that, like, a version of the game that you can play. That is the free drugs.
I played World of Warcraft for probably 6 months.
Yeah.
And I am so bad at MMOs.
Yeah.
Not like mechanically, although also mechanically.
Yeah.
But like I don't engage with whatever it is that people get out of MMOs. Mm. Like the play flow for those games annoys me.
I see.
Like there's only so much grinding Yetis that I can do before I get very tired of grinding Yetis.
Okay.
But I really want to get another level.
All right. I'm gonna take the side of the MMO apologist for now.
Surprising exactly zero fucking
shut up. So I recently like I take some big breaks from WoW. I played the Dragonflight expansion for maybe 3 months, and then I didn't play at all for like the last year and a half. New expansion just came out. I'm playing again, right? I think that's probably the healthiest way to process it. I will say, like, MMOs, if we want to talk about like a way to tell stories, the things that World of Warcraft has done since like vanilla World of Warcraft have really made like massive strides in how you can tell a story digitally in a like long format. One of the big innovations of this new War Within expansion is that right off the hop, they're like, by the way, this is part one of three. The next three expansions are all going to tie a larger story together.
Yeah, I don't want to curse this, but I a little bit want to curse. How fucking great would it be if they just pulled a George R.R. Martin and then never released the last section?
Well, unfortunately, this is like the only way that they can print money now. So,
yeah,
because no one trusts Blizzard to do any other projects.
No, no, they don't. Nor should they.
No, but I'm saying like MMOs now are not just a grind fest to get levels. You know, you have a level cap. It's pretty easily achieved, but now they are doing much larger narrative campaigns. And I think sometime in the last 5 years, somebody at Blizzard was like, hey, the glory days of what an old school MMO was like with like your EverQuests and stuff like that, that were definitely just grind fests, they're gone. And now everyone who still plays this game after 20 years is, guess what, like mid to late 30s and doesn't have an infinite amount of time anymore. So we're going to focus more on like solo type content and just tell really good stories.
I think my favorite,
what do I know? I'm a DGen WoW player.
I think my favorite like narrative MMO to like read about. I don't want to play it. I have played it. I suck at it and I hate it.
Is it EVE Online?
It really is.
And so that's so funny to me. Because, like, EVE does not have a narrative.
No.
And that's all just people being people and doing dickish things.
Yes. But at the same time, it's brilliant. Like, the found
narrative options. Oh, it's so compelling, yeah.
Are so good. Did you see that trailer that they put out that was, like, just in-game experiences with, like, in-game comms?
No, I did not.
It was probably the most compelling game trailer I have ever seen.
Really?
And it's just a bunch of nerds talking into microphones while they're flying fake ships around.
That's awesome.
It was fucking great. It's what convinced me to play. So that was like 10, 11 years ago that they put that trailer out. And it was fucking brilliant.
It's just people like, taking it super seriously and RPing.
Not even really like RPing as much as just like the tactics of it and like talking about what it is that they're doing. And like, they're going through a like weird part of null space doing like an exploration run. So they've got to be really careful because they know that like stuff is going on around them. So they're just like, there's some chatter happening or like some of the big battles that were going on. You had like people doing commands for like various factions of their army, and it sounds like something that a real commander in a real starship would be saying,
right?
With, like, shitty static from a internet mic.
yeah
Like, it's so good.
That's great.
But like the whole like goon squad thing.
Yes.
The fact that
RIP like, something awful.
Yeah, the one guy who's like the CEO of Goon Squad, who's like
Mitani.
A multi-millionaire.
Mitani.
Yeah, Mitani. Just like, he's making all of this money running a guild in an MMO from his cell phone.
Yes.
Because he doesn't That's actually great. Play the game anymore.
Yeah. I love the player expression that is available in EVE. I never want to sink that kind of time into getting to that point where I can interact with the game on that level, but I think it should exist, and I'm glad it does.
The skill floor for EVE Online is so high.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not even like skill, like actual skill. It's just like skills that you have had to grind.
I mean, there is that, but there's also just like understanding how the game works.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is really hard to wrap your head around if you're into like more conventional MMOs.
Like any other video game, basically.
Yeah, it's just like I'd like to joke that it's spreadsheets the video game. And right. In a lot of ways it kind of is, but at the same time, it's like spreadsheets in real time for a whole bunch of things that you have to keep track of at the same time. And if you don't keep track of one of them right, you explode.
Yeah, it's micromanager RPG or whatever.
Yeah. And I could never keep track of that many things at the same time. Right? If I got into a combat scenario, I was dead.
Yeah.
Every time I was playing that game, if I got into a combat scenario, I was dead. So I focused really hard on like getting a stealthy ship, which costs some money, like some actual dollars, because the stealthy ships require you to have like a subscription to be able to use them.
Yes.
At all. And like talk about predatory subscription models.
Yeah.
What the hell, EVE Online?
Okay, but also the fact that like once you're good enough at the game, you can completely negate that with Plex. Like that's pretty cool.
That is cool. But like getting to the point where you're able to pay Plex for your subscription requires you to have a subscription already.
Right.
Right, like you have a different skill cap from everyone else. Imagine like World of Warcraft had a free version where the skill cap for the free players was 20 levels below the skill cap for everybody else.
Right. I get it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And then it's all PvP all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is frankly what I want. If there was some way
that I never want to play.
What's that?
It's a great game that I never want to play again. Yeah.
Which is what I've heard a lot about World of Warcraft as well, so.
Maybe it's just, like, the era of World of Warcraft that I was playing.
Yeah.
But I have never found it that compelling.
Hmm. That's too bad.
Yeah. I could maybe be convinced to play it again for free.
Yeah.
And see if, like, it caught my attention this time, but.
Right.
Like.
Somehow I don't see that happening.
No, and I have like some fundamental issues with like the play flow of the standard MMOs anyway.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're supposed to be bitching about like games as a service, and instead we're just like talking about our favorite MMOs.
Whatever, man. You knew who we were.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this pod and you are surprised at all that happened, I don't know what to tell you. But you have not been paying attention.
Anyway, what I kind of foresee happening with this D&D Beyond thing, and a little bit some of the changes that Pathfinder has been moving towards, is that we're probably not going to see publications of physical media in the future.
Right.
Like, I have a feeling, I don't know how viable it is.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that there will be, at the very least, some significant thought put into making 6th edition D&D nothing but digital.
If they are not currently having that conversation, they are lying.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the way that Wizards of the Coast has been shifting since the, like, 4th edition discussions were happening for the OGO.
Yeah.
Has been moving more and more and more towards controlling the entire product as much as possible.
Right.
And I feel like you can't do that if you publish it in a book.
No. So you just can't.
This move to like just change spells. We're just changing the spells. We're changing the spells on D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. It's just some spells, right? But if D&D 2024 becomes a living document, where like anytime they need to make a balance change, they just make it.
Yeah.
Or if they start to release new content and new systems that are going to be compatible with the next version of D&D so that it doesn't even closely resemble D&D 5 anymore, then they can like slowly piecemeal those things out until they've morphed the entire system.
Yeah. Which is, again, I think exactly what they want.
Yes. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they stick to the bones of D&D 5. Because, like, they really don't want to have another D&D 4 situation happen.
Right. Where it's just, like, such a large departure that they kind of lose control.
Well, I think, like, D&D 4 represented a couple of big shifts for Wizards. Like, the first is that, yeah, there were a bunch of people who were super pissed off about the presentation of 4th edition. Right? Yeah. Like, they didn't love that the game reminded them of World of Warcraft, right? Like, whether or not that's a valid comparison to be making,
right.
I'm willing to say that, like, some people's experience with the introduction of the game was, this feels, and I can't, like, negate somebody's feelings. I can't, like, debate whether or not their feelings are correct.
We this can try. Feels,
I mean, we both know their feelings are wrong. But yeah. trying to convince them that their feelings are wrong, that's a whole different thing. But, like, this feels to me like something that I would see in a different type of game.
Right.
Right. So they had that to contend with. And then they also had, like, the dark horse that was Paizo show up and eat their lunch.
Right. By specifically targeting those dorks.
Specifically targeting those dorks. And, like, Paizo had spent a ridiculous amount of time and money becoming a trusted name in the D&D sphere.
Right.
Right? Because, like, up until the year before 4th edition came out, they were the ones who were publishing Dungeon and Dragon magazines, which were official publications for Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Right, so, like, they were a voice in Dungeons and Dragons that people trusted, and now they're going to go off and take their bat and their ball and go and play in a different field, the field that Wizards of the Coast left behind when they went to do 4th edition, and now we have competition in our own game.
Right.
So I think seeing that and seeing that, like, Paizo has been able to build and maintain a successful business off of what used to be their game has made them very concerned about the amount of control that they have over D&D 5.
Right.
And that's where we start to see these moves. That's where we start to see them put, like, the OGL changes that they made. They all make sense through that lens.
Right.
Right. They don't make sense for the consumer. They don't make sense for, like, partner companies. They don't make sense for anybody except Wizards of the Coast. But they do make sense within that lens.
Yeah. Right? And it's just, it's a lens of fear, frankly.
A lens of fear, and also, like, again, I don't know all of the movings and shakings that are happening in the background of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, but, like, it's very corporate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's got a flavor to it that reminds me of Amazon.
Ah, yes.
Right? Like, they want that control, and if they can't get that control, then they have to claw it back.
Yeah.
Right, so that's kind of what I'm seeing as, like, the main thrust of this thing. But, like, we're also seeing other companies kind of starting to follow suit.
Well, yeah, anyone that has, like, corporate, like, interest that they're beholden to, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, who else really is in, like, the digital tabletop space?
Besides Roll20?
I'm thinking more like the games themselves.
Oh. Jeez, that's kind of hard to
What's that platform that lets you play like board games on it?
Board Game Arena? So there's several. There's Board Game Arena, there's Boardaju, there's Yucatan, there's the guys who make the Tabletop Simulator. There's a few different.
The sudden change in your voice when I mentioned board games.
Shut up!
To me that we are like overdue for another like Josh Gets to Rant About Board Games episode.
we'll do that when some of the new releases I've been waiting for this year come in.
Okay. Maybe we'll hop on like Board Game Simulator and we'll play through a game of like Dragon Wing or something. Is it Dragon Wing? Dragon Flight?
What are you Bird talking Flight? About? Are you talking about
game, Wormspan? Game with the stupid birds? Sure.
Wingspan? Wormspan. Sure.
Wormspan.
Wormspan. Yeah. That's not online yet.
Okay. the game with the birds and the dragons.
Those are two games using the same. You know what? No, you're not going to trap me, trick me into like getting excited about board games and then just pull the rug out from under me. I'm not going to get fucking Charlie Brown here.
Okay. Well, how about we do like an episode while you are teaching me how to play a board game that I have never played before?
Okay, I might be able to do that.
All right. But yeah, like I feel like those services, like right now, we're in a place where they are not proprietary.
Right.
Like they're facilitating the playing of board games that otherwise exist. And like, I don't know what the like purchase mechanics on that are. Like, do you have to buy the game digitally to be able to play?
No. So okay. Almost all of these are free implementations. There are like some games like Wingspan have a digital version that they have published that you can buy as like an app. Most of them, what they do is Board Game Arena, now that it is owned by Asmodee, they have a month, like, sorry, they do have a monthly subscription, or you can just buy the annual subscription. It's like $50 for the whole year to be a premium member, which is like, honestly, fine. Like the value you get is you can play solo games and you can start a game at any time. Of like, there's certain games that are tagged as premium. So like, if I want to play right now, I'm not a premium member. If I want to play Earth, I have to wait for a premium member to start a game of Earth and then I can join.
There's just a game called Earth.
Yes. it's about plants. You're developing the fauna and flora in an ecosystem on an island. Look,
Have you played Spawn? Is it called Spawn? Swarm?
Spawn? Spawn? What are you talking about?
Spore. That's what I'm talking
about. Spore. I have not played Spore. It didn't.
My kid has been obsessed with it for a while.
Okay.
And I have been largely annoyed with it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like,
as far as I could tell, it was not like a game. It was like a bunch of like tech tools stapled together.
There is a game in it.
Right.
Or rather, I should say there are several games in it, and that is the thing that bothers me the most.
Yeah, what did I just tell you?
Like, well, it isn't just like the tech tools. It's like you start off and it's very like one of those like worm games, the .io games where you're like trying to eat all the stuff without getting eaten. And then you get big enough that you're able to grow legs and like hang out on land.
Okay.
And then there's a slightly different version of that where you have to like go and either make friends with or kill other species.
Okay.
And like you can eat the fruit if you're a vegetarian, you can eat the things that you kill if you're not.
Okay.
And then after a while, it adds like another game where instead you're now running like a tribe of those
dudes. Yeah.
And then it turns into a city manager.
Right.
And then it turns into a game where you're flying a UFO around a planet trying to steal species. And like each of these has some elements in common with some of the previous stages, but
yeah.
Each stage is like a whole different fucking game.
Yeah.
and it drives me nuts.
Well, if you know anything about the guy who designed it, it would actually make sense. Like,
I don't want it to make sense.
It wouldn't be that surprising, I should say.
Yeah, I don't want it to make sense. I want it to be good, and it's not.
Nope.
It's disparate and weird, and there are so many different chunks to it that I have to, like, relearn between sections. And, like, the map works differently now, and, like, the map is not very well put together. Nope. Like, I don't have any, like, ability to move around on it. I have to, like, click a thing if I want to go somewhere. It's bullshit.
And so, imagine being excited for Spore because the only thing you knew about it was that first part. The first thing that you were doing. That's what people got sold on. And then he's like, by the way, that's 10% of the game. And the rest of it is dog shit.
Well, like, the part that I was excited about was the part that I was seeing on, like, some of the YouTube videos that Thor was watching of, like, here's me and, like, the character creator, so I can, like, move these spikes around and I can give it, like, different mouths and, like, all of the, like, character creation shit.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's, like, what everyone got sold on.
The very first part of the game where I'm, like, an amoeba was fun.
Yeah.
The part where I grew legs felt like a pretty natural extension of that.
Yes. Two extensions.
And then as soon... Okay. I'm gonna validate that with a response, and the response is ugh. And, like, in that section you're able to, like, get together with a crew of other, like, critters to run around and, like, help dance to impress your, like, fellows or whatever. That was fine. As soon as it turned into, like, village maintenance, I was fucking over it.
Yeah.
Right. And then it turned into, like, city to city, and I had resource management. It turned into, like, a bad SimCity meets, like, StarCraft 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready to flip my desk. So mad. Anyway, I don't know how we got onto Spore. You said something that reminded me of it, and I don't remember what it was.
I wish I knew. I could tell you, but I don't know. Anyways, something about service video games.
Yeah. Okay. Well, games as a service, bad. That's kind of my whole opinion on it.
Yeah, and I think that was the main thing that you wanted to, like, discuss was, like, you know, with Wizards very obviously trying to turn D&D into a service-based product, people are not super chill with that.
I feel like, okay.
I think it's a bad approach to take with the game that you have that, you know, even in 4th edition, people didn't like it, but at least their digital implementations were trying to add value.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, like, okay, I know I just said games as service bad, but, like, I feel like there is room for that somewhere.
Right.
Right, like, I feel like there is a good implementation of tabletop games as a service.
Right.
I don't know what it is, and if I did, I would be making a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, like, it feels like there is space in there to do something interesting with that concept.
Sure. Yeah, but I don't think you're wrong on that front.
What Dungeons & Dragons is doing with it is the initiatification of their own product.
Yeah, they're just trying to hose money out of you.
Yeah. In ways that are arcane.
Yes, and egregious, like, and nakedly apparent. Like
I feel like this is one of the weird situations where I think it would actually make a lot of sense for Wizards of the Coast to, like, sit down and be honest about what their intentions are.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if they were to sit down and tell me a thing that I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Right. They come out and they're like, hey, so what we want to do with D&D Beyond, making this change the way that we're doing, is we want to trick people into buying the new version of D&D because they think the old version is obsolete now.
Right.
At least I understand that.
Yeah.
Like, at least, well, I fucking get that.
Frankly, if they were just like, hey, look, we need to trick people into buying the new edition of D&D, because if we don't sell a new edition of D&D every 10 years, this company's going to go under. Like, straight up. If we don't...
Except that, like...
If you don't spend X dollars per year per person, we cannot continue this company in the way that you have become accustomed to.
The first part of their company, though, right? Like, the first game as a service, as I mentioned earlier, being Magic the Gathering...
Right.
Is their lunch. That's what keeps the light on.
Right.
Right. Dungeons and Dragons has rarely turned a profit, in my understanding. Like, it has...
Like, in their history, or, like...
Yes.
In this version?
In its history.
Okay.
Like, when TSR was running it, it was slowly working its way into the ground. Like, it made a profit to begin with, and it slowly worked its way into the ground.
Right.
Wizards of the Coast bought it, and they were making money on Magic the Gathering. They didn't care how Dungeons and Dragons did, because they had the money from Magic.
Right.
They put out a thing that Peter Atkinson cared about. Right, and they supported it as well as they could. But, like, the amount of times over the course of Dungeons & Dragons history that it has actually turned a profit, in my understanding, is actually rather low.
Okay.
The thing that D&D has going for it is brand recognition.
Mm.
Right, it is a well-loved premier brand in the role-playing game space. But trying to figure out how to make that make money consistently is fucking hard.
Right. But that's, like, I've sort of been of the opinion before that, like, worrying about that is not productive. You should be doing just enough to keep it at the forefront of culture, like the way that it has been for years, and then just license the fuck out of it to people who, like, give a shit.
I think that's what they tried to do with the movie, and then the movie didn't make money.
The movie was so good. How did it not make
the movie was so good, and then it didn't make any money.
Like, how do you fuck something up that badly? Anyways,
marketing.
Yep, that's always the answer. Marketing.
Marketing. All right. So next episode, marketing Dungeons and Dragons. I guess
marketing. Why everyone who does it is of Satan.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.